evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington, and here are some of the stories we're covering for you today, Friday, October 18th, 2019. Reconciling certain communities in South Sudan remains a big problem.
I may forgive somebody and then I will never forget because that person is just near me. And then if it makes me forget, the only thing is I've said, I forgive you, and then you have to be taken away near me.
And the Sudan peace talks resume in Juba.
The parties have agreed on categorizing and sequencing the negotiation issues as follows. 1, political issues. 2, humanitarian issues.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Community leaders in Yei River State's Morobo County say the presence of armed forces who committed crimes against civilians beginning in 2016 is hindering efforts to reconcile communities there. They say it also hampers the return of thousands of South Sudanese who sought refuge in neighboring countries during the fighting. Daniel Friday Martin has more for VOA from Yei.
County leaders held a peace conference on October 5th at St. Joseph's Church in Morobo, aimed at reconciling soldiers and citizens in the area. Women rights activist Joyce Adie says while most residents are prepared to reconcile, many women are too afraid to resettle in their former villages because armed men who committed sexual crimes against them are still roaming around.
I may forgive somebody and then I will never forget because that person is just near me. And then if it make me forget, the only thing is I've said, I forgive you, and then you have to be taken away near me, especially all those soldiers who have been in this Morobo County. If all of them are transferred and then we need new faces.
Adie says, despite an order by the government reiterated by several county commissioners for soldiers to stop destroying houses and public institutions, some soldiers continue to remove parts of people's homes like iron bars. She says some soldiers also cut down fruit trees from residents' farms and homes to produce firewood and charcoal, which they sell to locals. Speaking in his native Kakwa dialect, Naftali Hassan Silas, a paramount chief of Morobo County, says both government and opposition forces continue to violate the rights of local chiefs and residents after last year's peace deal was signed by the warring parties.
Armed groups did lots of bad things to the chiefs, who have been accused of feeding either side. Mothers and children have been raped, and sometimes civilians are beaten or killed. But with all these bad things, we have forgiven them.
Yakani says government and opposition forces should respect the peace deal they signed so South Sudanese who sought refuge in Uganda and the Democratic Republic of Congo can return home. Speaking in Arabic, Morobo town resident Samuel Dada says some local government officials are using hate speech against returnees, which makes reconciliation of communities extremely difficult.
There are people who have never been here due to the crisis, and on return, they are being questioned and talked to with intimidating voices by people here. Most of us are still in the camps, and once there is peace, we need to participate in elections, and we must stop trading on war so that many of us can return to work and feed on his own sweat.
James Kenyi, Bishop of Morobo Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan, says the relationship between the army and civilians has greatly improved over the past several months. Bishop Kenyi says, although the church is working to reunite communities affected by conflict, certain government officials oppose reconciliation.
There are threats. There are bad elements who are in the government who actually make people not to come. But now the problem is forgiveness, my brother, is not an easy thing. We can speak of forgiveness, but there are people whose heart are very difficult to forgive.
Morobo County Commissioner Paulino Dada says his office has received several complaints against soldiers accused of violating the rights of civilians.
It's not the soldiers that they have done something, but maybe there are some individuals, some few individuals which we are tracking them now, seriously. And that's why I wanted them to come, so that they can give me more information. So that if when a soldier has done something wrong, so that we account for him or her.
Dada says communities must reconcile because people are tired of war. Chapter 5 of the River Tarais Peace Agreement provides for the establishment of a commission for truth, reconciliation and healing, a commission for compensation and reparations, and a hybrid court to try people accused of committing crimes against civilians during the civil war. For VOA News, I'm Daniel Friday Martin, reporting from Yatown.
Conflict in South Sudan may have subsided in many parts of the country, and a shaky peace process is in the works. But the progress on the political front has not ended gender-based violence across the country, according to a new report by Refugees International. This is in part due to a lack of accountability and an absence of the formation of a hybrid court of South Sudan to bring justice to victims, according to the group. Devon Cohn is a senior advocate at Refugee International. Cohn told my colleague Ayan Bior this week that her organization sent a team to both Juba and Malakal in July and August to speak with dozens of civilians, as well as UN officials, government officials, and non-governmental organizations operating in both places.
People there told us all sorts of things. Both men and women told us that they are concerned about the peace process. They don't have a lot of trust in it at the moment, and they're a bit skeptical about the implementation of all the pieces of the peace agreement and just, you know, sustainable peace and really being able to go back home. Many of them wanted to go back home, but again, don't feel comfortable yet. And particularly with women and girls in Malakal, the conditions are such that there's violence within the POCs, as well as fear of violence outside of the POC. And also many of the women that we talked about how, well, they would like to go home, many of them being from Malakal town, but when they have checked on their house or had other people check on their houses, those houses were often occupied and, you know, they didn't feel comfortable confronting people that were occupying their homes, and therefore they didn't feel like they could go home yet.
I'm surprised to learn that people don't feel completely safe in the POC, because that's why it exists, is a place of refuge and where people can find some form of safety. Did the people that you spoke to, did they give you an indication of why they don't feel safe in the POC?
It really depends on who you are in the POC. So certainly the women that we talked to and girls that we spoke to, the reasons why they said they didn't feel totally safe in the POC was that there's just, you know, a lot of issues with cramped quarters, gang violence, if you will. So kind of young men that harass them or, threaten them. And just the sense that people are there for a long period of time and are frustrated. And that has led to some of the feelings of, being unsafe within the POC itself. But I think it really depends on who you are and what your vulnerabilities are.
Did your team notice any patterns while doing this research? I know that the report mentions one reoccurring pattern is women are afraid of venturing out of the POCs, as you just mentioned, to get firewood or to get, you know, whatever they might need. Could you talk about that or any other patterns that you may have noticed?
Sure. Well, women certainly did say that. They did say that UNMISS had instituted over the last few years firewood patrols where they helped to escort the women to get firewood so they would be safe. But those have, at least in Malakal, generally reduced in numbers because of the peace agreement and the fact that it's a bit safer. However, I think, again, a lot of women don't really feel totally safe. They're skeptical of kind of the ability people have to protect them. And they really just think that there's a lot of kind of lawlessness outside of the POCs, and they're afraid of that. I think another trend we saw was that there are a lot of underage and unexpected pregnancies within the POCs. And that certainly is an issue for women and girls in particular. And is something that the NGOs and UN agencies are really trying to address and help provide services for those women and girls.
That was Devon Cohn, Senior Advocate for Women and Girls at Refugees International. She was speaking with my colleague Ayan Bior yesterday here in Washington, D.C. Face-to-face talks between the Sudanese government officials and the SPLM North faction based in the Nuba Mountains area and two smaller Sudanese rebel groups got underway in Juba today. The two sides agreed on an agenda that focuses on political issues, humanitarian affairs, and security. Separate talks between the government and a different umbrella rebel group began last night, as we hear from Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
Mediators, Khartoum officials, and representatives of the SPLM North faction led by Abdelaziz Al-Hilu, who represents three rebel groups, held a closed-door meeting at Juba's Pyramid Hotel. 3 hours later, General Samseddine Kabasi, a military representative of the Sudanese government delegation, and Amar Amona, Secretary General of the SPLM North, marched to say they signed an agreement on the agenda of the talks. Mohamed Hassan Al-Taisi is the Sudan government delegation spokesperson.
The parties have agreed on categorizing and sequencing the negotiation issues as follows: 1, political issues; 2, humanitarian issues; 3, security arrangement. 2, the parties have agreed on the necessity to agree on a declaration of principles as a roadmap that governs the negotiation process.
Al-Taisi says the parties agreed to present their proposals. SPLM North spokesperson Ajak Mahamud calls the agenda for the talks a great achievement.
The two parties embarked in direct engagement this morning since 9 o'clock, and recently we make a very important breakthrough.
Speaking in Arabic, President Salva Kiir's security advisor Tuthkeu Galwak, who is leading the talks, says the agreed-upon agenda gives the parties a clear direction to follow during the negotiations.
We thank God we had a meeting this morning at 9 a.m. with our brothers in SPLM North, and we have reached an agreement. And the first agreement we had agreed on is on humanitarian issue, security and political issue, and all the issues that will make us to reach the final peace agreement.
On Tuesday, the SPLM North announced it was suspending its part in the talks after accusing government forces of bombing several villages in the Nuba Mountains and killing one person. The government delegation also met with the Sudan Revolutionary Front, or SRF, negotiators in separate talks. Al-Taisi says the two sides are expected to reach agreement on an agenda soon.
From yesterday until this morning, we finished by 1:30 this morning. So we've taken a long time to discuss that issues. We walk through that issues. We haven't agreed yet for a whole agenda, but we nearly to reach that agreement.
The South Sudan-sponsored talks are expected to last 2 months. Similar talks mediated by the African Union over the 8 years failed to resolve the conflict between the rebels and the previous Sudanese government, led by former President Omar el-Bashir, who was ousted by military leaders earlier this year after months of protest. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. The Sudan government orders closures of some of its borders. Find out where when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what makes you feel loved and appreciated?
Even when most time I do something good and people praise me, ask somewhere like that thing you did, and that most time it makes me feel good.
What makes me feel loved, it's internal. I hardly have somebody who, you know, makes me feel loved. Although I would say my parents inspire me and push me on, but they have a strange way of doing it. Most times it's through criticism. When you are criticized, it spurs me up.
When actually people have concern about me, because there are different languages of love. Okay, some people do appreciate the word aspect of love. Some people, spoken words per se. Some people it is gift. But for me, what makes me feel love, like I said earlier, is when people care for me.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Sudan recently ordered the closure of its borders with the Central African Republic and Libya over security concerns, the first major policy decision by the ruling Sovereign Council since the fall of former President Omar al-Bashir. While some have welcomed the measure, border traders say the closures threaten their livelihood. Naba Mohideen has the reaction for VOA from Khartoum.
3 weeks ago, Sudan's executive body ordered the closure of the country's borders with the Central African Republic and Libya, citing security concerns. The order has been gradually implemented since. However, some Sudanese say the decision is affecting business. The country is enduring a transportation crisis brought on by a shortage of fuel and spare parts for vehicles. Spare parts trader Ahmed Bouchara thinks opening the borders would ease the situation. Bouchara says the current high price of transportation isn't about the fuel shortages only. Spare parts are a major element for the cars. If the borders are open and trade is facilitated, it will reflect positively on the car sector and spare parts. There is no need for such a decision, he says. It's better to monitor movement on the borders and allow youngsters to cross only if they want to trade. Unlike Bouchara, Numan Issa has welcomed the measure, even though he once tried to migrate through Libya to Europe, only to return to Darfur. Numan says Libyan gangs and militias are a danger for Sudanese youth, hoping to escape poverty and strife. Issa says he is one of the people who lost their friends and colleagues in Libya. He said the measure is positive if it will stop the illegal migration, but he hopes the new government will deal with the people detained and lost in Libya and also handle the root cause of Sudanese youngsters leaving and put in measures for legal migration. The Sovereign Council decided to close the borders after a September clash between rival militias in Birao, Central African Republic, that left 23 people dead. Council members cited reports that militiamen were sneaking into Sudan on their way to join other militias in Libya. But political analyst Uthman Merghani thinks the council has both economic and security concerns. Putting in consideration that the main smuggling of commodities is one of the eastern borders, not on the western ones, he says western borders have many security concerns, especially weapon smuggling and armed troops entering the country from Libya and other countries that suffer from security issues. Sudan is located on a widely used migration route that links East and Central Africa with the Mediterranean and Europe. The unrest Sudan has been before and since the ouster of Bashir led the European Union to suspend funds for migration control, allowing a greater number of migrants to enter the country. It remains to be seen whether the border closures will slow down the flow. Naba Mohideen for VOA News, Khartoum.
The UN Refugee Agency UNHCR in South Sudan says heavy flooding caused by torrential rains in Mabang County has affected nearly 200,000 people, including many refugees. The area hosts more than 150,000 refugees from Sudan's Blue Nile region. A UNHCR official in South Sudan says the floods have submerged vast areas affecting schools and hospitals. Several schools remain closed in the area. Viola Elias has this report for VOA from Juba.
Eugene Bion, a UNHCR communication officer in South Sudan, says the flooding caused by heavy seasonal rains and excess water flowing from the Ethiopia highland is making it difficult for aid agencies to access the refugee camp in Mabang County.
The major road from the humanitarian hub to the refugee camp and also the main road to Bunj town are submerged. So we have a huge challenge to access those population, including refugees and host community affected by this flooding. And also that the schools are all closed since August. Couldn't open it because of the flooding.
Byong says people have lost their livestock and their farms. She says most of the refugees affected by the heavy flooding are women and children.
63% is women and children. So we're talking about the vulnerability of a woman and children increase such a natural disaster. So UNHCR has pre-positioned already like 5,000 the emergency shelter kit and also the core relief item to help the most vulnerable population.
Byong says UNHCR and other aid agencies are working together to help the people of Maban County get through the crisis.
We are actually currently monitoring the situation, and we're hoping that the water level will go down so that we can quickly gain access to those area to assess the situation and then to hear from the population what's their need and to respond accordingly.
Separate flooding in the SPLM-IO controlled Thoreau County of Lajor State, which was carved out of former Upper Nile State, has displaced more than 5,000 households last week, according to local leaders. County Press Secretary Lul Simon says Thoreau County residents are in a dire need of humanitarian assistance.
More than 1,500 households, leaving the mentioned numbers of families helpless, are now in dire need of food, shelters, and non-food items. The situation is still deteriorating because the river waters keep increasing day by day.
UN OCHA says heavy rains and flooding in parts of the country has displaced hundreds of thousands of people, increasing the number of malaria cases. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
In our final story, we give a salute to South Sudan-born Luol Deng, the two-time National Basketball Association All-Star, who is retiring from the NBA after 15 years. Deng was drafted in 2004 by the Chicago Bulls. The 34-year-old professional athlete wrote on his personal Instagram account this week that he wanted his basketball story to end where it all began, in Chicago, where he began playing as a teenager. The NBA reports Deng averaged about 15 points and 6 rebounds in his 15-season career, representing some 902 games. The Bulls will honor Deng at a home game later this season, according to the NBA. Well, it is Friday, and so that means it's time for some of our listener comments from our WhatsApp line. Joseph Gatmai Chwol in Khartoum writes, "I am very happy for your wonderful news that I always listen to on air. My comment is about the peace agreement in my nation, South Sudan. You South Sudanese leaders, you are taking our pride away because we are not seeing any progress in the peace implementation. I am very sad. We need unity in the nation." Huar Buoni Ruot from Juba writes, "I would like to congratulate Dr. Abiy Ahmed, the Ethiopian Prime Minister, for being among the few African leaders who have received the Nobel Peace Prize Award. Abiy deserves such recognition as a leader who dedicated his tireless efforts to restore general peace and tranquility in the region and in Ethiopia in particular." Jel Akun from Juba writes about the abductions in Ye River State. He asks, "What is the reason of abducting innocent civilians? The opposition has to respect people's rights and values because those chiefs are innocent, and their immediate release is very important." Mal Adao Mal in Bortown writes, "Hello, Voice of America. I urge all South Sudanese politicians to embrace the spirit of humility and commitment towards permanent peace in this war-torn nation as the November deadline approaches. They should cease giving out rambling speeches and holding meetings. Let everyone speak the language of peace so as to avoid more bloodshed." Danielle Deng from Nairobi, Kenya writes, "It is a great thing that Voice of America always delivers very genuine news to our doors about South Sudan. I feel like I am at home when I get to listen on what's happening back home." Kual Atem from Bor writes, "We thank the United States for imposing sanctions on Ashraf Seyed Ahmed al-Cardinal for his corrupt deals in South Sudan. We are happy Kur Ajing Ater also was sanctioned." Mariel Nial from Tonge writes, "I was shocked to hear the United States of America put sanctions on two South Sudanese. My question to VOA is, al-Cardinal a South Sudanese? He is from Sudan, and he has been looting our resources since 2005. Yes, Nial, al-Cardinal is in fact from Sudan, and we apologize for stating he was from South Sudan earlier in our reports this week. And a listener who did not give their name wants a favor, asking, can you extend your program to Saturday, focusing on South Sudan? Well, we're not sure about that, but we appreciate hearing from all of you, and please keep your comments coming.
South Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202 630 8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202 630 8011.
And that is our show for this Friday. We now leave you with the song Could You Be Loved by Bob Marley. Been listening to the legendary Bob Marley with the song Could You Be Loved. I'm Carol Van Damme in Washington. Thanks for joining us this evening. Have a safe and peaceful weekend, and we hope you tune in again on Monday for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from The Voice of America.